Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to a November 2, 2008 segment from the Kentucky Water Fuel Museum. Tonight we have an electronics broadcast engineer by the name of Mike Walsh, who has only been acquainted with water fuel technology for about a year, but in that time he's made great strides in researching and developing hydrogen boosters that have been very effective in the vehicles that he's tested them on. So we'd like to hear from Mike and see exactly what kind of results he's gotten, using what kind of system, some of the obstacles he's come up against and how he's overcome them. Let's see if Mike is not with us at this time. Still not. And so while we're waiting, perhaps we can just mention the fact that... here we go. Let's see. Good evening, Mike.
Hello.
Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Great to be on.
Well, thank you for joining us. So perhaps we can acquaint our audience with just who you are and what your background is and how you got interested in water fuel technology and what you've done about it.
Okay. Well, I'm a former radio personality turned engineer. I actually work for a radio broadcasting company, and I maintain and repair equipment on four different radio stations in the central Pennsylvania area.
Okay.
So I have a great background with broadcast electronics and transmitters and that sort of thing. I'm a ham radio operator, so I love to play around with ham radio equipment and anything radio-related generally tickles my fancy. Love electronics, and I also love cars. Got a number of friends that are into muscle cars and converting imports to higher horsepower and tuning for maximum performance and all of that. So that gives you an idea.
Mm-hmm. And so the combination of your background in electronics as well as your interest in automobiles, how is it you first became acquainted with the notion of turning water into hydrogen oxygen fuel and inducting it into the engine?
Well, to be perfectly honest, it sounded kind of far-fetched to me. It was about a year ago that the gas prices started to become, to me, a bit unreasonable. I have to commute about 31 miles each way to work and back, so a 62-mile commute every day. It was hitting me pretty hard in the wallet, and I decided to get online and do some research about this time a year ago and see what I could do to help myself out. And so I was just researching the different things that people were trying, fuel additives and things like that. And I happened to stumble across the Water for Gas website. And, of course, looking over the website, I thought immediately, ooh, it seems a little bit too good to be true. But should I give it a chance? I don't know. Let me see what this guy has to say. I read through the website, and there was part of me saying, this seems like it could kind of work. And there was another part saying, well, science... generally says that you can't get more energy out than you put in, so that could be a problem. Well, let me see if this actually works. It actually got me so curious about the whole thing that I just had to find out for myself whether or not there was any truth in it whatsoever. So
did
I set out to...
Did you get flack from your friends or anything for deciding to pursue it?
Absolutely. I have, I have some auto mechanics that are friends of mine and these performance enthusiasts that are friends of mine, and they immediately started to laugh and said that I was just wasting my time and that, there's no truth to that whatsoever, and it was just snake oil and blah, blah, blah. I've heard it all. So anyway, I decided to just ignore them because, quite frankly, I thought it was worth the pursuit. I mean, if it worked, it'd be great, right? I mean, I'd be saving so much money going to work and back if it actually worked. And if it didn't work, I would still learn a whole lot, And so I thought, what's there to lose, really? I got everything to gain and nothing to lose by at least trying it out. So
yeah, well,
that's what I set out to do.
You have to hand it to the water for gas approach, which, this is not something that originated with Ozzie Freedom, who's the one who did the hyper-marketing of it. which caused
yeah.
me to notice it. This was a concept that actually came from Bill Lang down in Florida and his brother Tom out in California. And they're the ones who were using mason jars as a water injection device they've been tinkering with for over 20 years.
Oh, okay. I didn't know they were doing that long.
Yeah, the idea of then just doing the electrolysis in one of those jars. They already had the jars under the hood to suck air through water to add a little bit of moisture to the intake, you know,
mm-hmm.
for water injection. Then they decided to go ahead and start doing electrolysis in those jars. So the fact that it's such an easy thing to do, the fact that you can take some materials that are already in your kitchen or in your garage and just throw together a system that actually works.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how is it you approached it then? You went ahead and ordered the water for gas materials?
Yep, I ordered the e-book and I read it, and I read it all within, I think it was just one day it took me. I was so on fire to see what was going to happen with this product and to see if it actually worked that I decided to go ahead and get all the materials within the very first week after I read the book. I just went out and started collecting at the various hardware stores. And I also recruited some of my my friends that were a little bit less critical of the whole system. The ones that were willing to play along and see if it would work, they were curious themselves, so I recruited a bunch of them. And we all got to work on the system, and within, I'd say, about 2 weeks, we had an assembled system ready to go, and I mean completely. This is everything. And the water for gas system, for those of you that don't know what it all consists of, it's the electrolyzer, of course, and then you have the fuel heater, which rests on the radiator hose of your vehicle and exchanges the wasted heat energy from your radiator hose to the gasoline to help preheat it for better combustion. I also built the MAP sensor enhancer. That's an electronic enhancer used to slightly lean the fuel mixture, which is what we're trying to achieve, a slightly lean burn that is obtainable with the help of hydroxy gas. Built the entire system, the PCV valve enhancer, the filter that goes on the PCV valve, built that as well, and put
everything
in. What is everything
that exactly?
It's actually a filter that is meant for air power tools that you can get at your local Lowe's or Home Depot. And what you do is you take that airline filter and you fill it with something like, say, BBs or small marbles. And the reason you're doing that is that the round cylindrical or the objects in there are going to act as a condenser. They're going to actually pull any kind of moisture out of the air that's circulating through the PVC valve. So any toxins, any pollutants, any bad things that you don't want, the cruddy stuff that would normally come out of the PCV valve and get re-injected through the air intake, completely filtered out by this filter, which you have to empty. Well, it depends on your vehicle. You have to watch it and see when it fills up with condensation, and it will. You also notice there will be a little bit of oil in there, dirty oil, and some unburnt gasoline as well, just a tiny little bit in there that's filled with this crud that you don't want going into your engine because it's going to inhibit better combustion. So that's what that does. It sits on the line.
So it acts as a trap.
Yeah, it acts as a trap. It allows the things that you want to continue into the air intake to go through, and it inhibits the things that you don't want. The heavier things are going to remain in the filter because it hangs vertically on the line, and so the water and the, like I said, the sludge and stuff like that is going to gather up in that filter. And you do have to, it does require a small amount of maintenance. You have to look at it, I'd say, like once every 2 weeks. I heard in wintertime it's going to be a little bit heavier than that, maybe once every week. You look at it, and it's clear. It's perfectly clear. You can see right through it. Just unscrew it, dump it out, clean it out with a little bit of water, put it back together again, and you're good to go. And that really cleans out the inside of your engine dramatically.
And let's go back to the fuel heater. So you're taking a radiator hose, you're cutting it in half, and you're putting a heat exchanger type thing in it?
I'm not cutting the radiator hose in half. What I'm doing is taking the fuel line on a car normally comes from the rear of the vehicle up to the fuel injection manifold, and you just pull that line off, or sever it if you have to, but you pull that line off of what would normally go straight into the injection manifold, and you interrupt it there, send it over to your heater, which is placed on the radiator hose and then wrapped in a layer of aluminum foil, actually several layers of aluminum foil. The fuel heater itself consists of a bunch of copper pipes, small little pipe fittings that you can get, once again, at your local hardware store, Lowe's, Home Depot, whatever. You place them together, screw them all together, and then place them on the radiator hose of the vehicle. Wrap that in a nice thermal blanket of either header wrap or aluminum foil. And then your radiator hose is heating up to, I believe, around 285 degrees. And that's not enough to vaporize the gasoline that's coming through, but it's certainly enough to get the molecules in the fuel excited enough that by the time they do hit the combustion chamber, you're going to have significantly better combustion. And that's the purpose of it. So.
Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you're doing a combination of three different things then, huh?
It's a little bit more than that. What I did is I implemented the water for gas system just the way it was in the book. I followed everything to the letter. And did it work? Absolutely. It did work, but I had some problems with the mason jars, and I was trying to get more hydroxy out of the jars than I really should have been trying to get because they were not capable of handling 20 amps of current. And I had I was doing the experiment on a 1998 Jeep Cherokee 4.0 inline six engine, and I felt that with three mason jars putting out at the highest amperage possible, which I believe is something like maybe 8 amps apiece, I could not get quite enough hydroxy to keep the engine from pinging with a slightly lean mixture. I just could not do it. And so I came to the conclusion that I needed to build a bigger electrolyzer for my particular engine. And so I set out to look at plans all over the internet for that. And I decided to just build a cell within PVC. So I went out and got all the parts for a PVC housing. And I got some stainless steel. And I read all over the net that 316L is the highest grade of stainless steel, and that's what you want to use, because anything lower than that is going to easily degrade in the electrolysis process. Then you're going to have a really murky, muddy mess in your water, and it's obviously going to break the cell down over time, and it's going to become useless. So I went out and got the 316L stainless steel sheets from a metal supplier in my area, and they were not cheap. Definitely not cheap, but definitely worth it in the long run. Cut the plates. I tried different cuts on the plates, and the reason for that is I discovered after looking at all the research out there, what I did is I just looked at what everyone was doing as a general consensus to the research, because I knew that the technology was real at this point. I actually saw that my emissions on the Jeep went down dramatically. And yes, I could lean back the fuel mixture just ever so slightly, but if I would climb a hill or be under a high load condition in my vehicle, I'd hear some pinging, and that bothered me. I couldn't have that happening. So I decided to pursue a better liter per minute output on my electrolyzer. But anyway.
Well, this was with no help from Water for Gas, right? This
no help from Water for Gas. I had already learned. I took the theory that I learned in Ozzie's books, and I said, okay, I can take this another step further. And I believe that that's really what the purpose of the books is. If you read the books, I don't think Ozzie meant it to just say, you do this and this only and just leave it at that. He wants people to experiment. He obviously wants them to succeed.
Well, what he wants is your $97.
Well, yes. Yes.
Because ultimately you end up finding out that everything he taught you in the $97 was available for free in internet chat groups.
Yeah,
but he pulled it all together to make it easy for a first-time, you know, interested person.
And for that reason, I feel he deserves the $97.
Yeah, because he's on a mega campaign to make this concept everywhere on the internet to the point of, you know, aggravation. So, yeah. And it got people like you looking at the next level.
Absolutely. And so I did take it to the next level, and I got this the cell assembled, and I tinkered around with different plate sizes, and the reason is resonance. Stanley Mayer found some sort of crazy electrical resonance that allowed him to produce over-unity amounts of gas, supposedly. And I knew that the key to just getting a efficient electrolyzer was to find at least some resonance in the plates. So I cut different lengths and tried different things until my output went up and my heat went down, because heat is obviously just wasted energy. And I found just the right measurements. And so I cut all my plates for that and put them all together into, it's a 5-plate configuration cell. You got 3 floaters in the middle and 2 plates on the outside, 1 positively charged, 1 negatively charged. And the thing works really, really well. At just under 18 amps, I get 1.8 liters per minute, close to 2 liters per minute. So it's a very highly efficient cell.
Now, this was following the approximate plans of a SMAX booster, then?
It's similar to that. I took the general idea of the reason I say SMAX booster, I compare it to that, is because it is a plate cell. It's not using light plates. It's using actual just sheets of stainless steel that I got from a metal supplier. But the reason I say it's similar is because SMAC uses what he calls floaters, and I decided to do the same thing to see if it would actually work. You got cells that are not electrically connected to anything, but the reason it works is because the water in between the plates becomes the conductor between. So that allows the circuit to continue, and therefore the voltage that you put between the charge plates gets divided amongst even the floater plates. Gets divided down, and your heat will go down as well, because that 14 volts, that 13.8 volts, is getting divided across the plates in an even fashion. It's a voltage divider circuit. So there you go. Built the cell. Cell was working very nicely. I had the MAP enhancer already previously from the water for gas experiment, and so I rolled with that, and it worked great. But after a while, I noticed that my mileage went down again. I had an increase in mileage. I had a small increase in mileage. It wasn't anything humongous, but the little bit of an increase that I did get went down, and then I started researching further. Why is that? Oh, my O2 sensors are sensing oxygen from my electrolyzer. That's not good. Okay, what can I do about that? Because I realized that the MAP enhancer was to deal with the ECU, but it wasn't quite working, because the ECU, I don't know how it found out what I was doing at the time. I was confused. I was like, how is this happening? It's changing things up again. But I read a little bit further and realized that the oxygen that was being created by my hydrogen generator, my hydroxy generator, was creating a misbalance within the exhaust. And because of that, the O2 sensors were responding, and the ECU is therefore injecting more fuel. And so something needed to be done about that, and I researched the fix for that, and that turned out to be an EFIE. That's a EFIE, or Electronic Fuel Injection Enhancer. And so I ordered the unit, installed it on my vehicle. Turns out that for my car, which is a 1998 Jeep Cherokee, I would not need to deal with the downstream O2 sensors, only the upstream. That means the one that's pre-catalytic converter. That's the one that determines the actual fuel trim of the vehicle, how the vehicle is going to inject the fuel. And so I placed the EFI on that O2 sensor, and I adjusted the EFI voltage, and I tried to achieve a slightly leaner mixture, and I achieved that. But once again, I ran into a problem with the ECU, because I got a check engine light. And I was just mystified. I scratched my head again because I just said, how is this happening? I get a little bit of success and I get a little bit of mileage, and then once again, the ECU is battling with me over it.
Yeah, this is a very common problem, and it's complicated by the fact that all the different manufacturers and different year models and the changes that have been made over the years, it really is a mess, you know.
Mm-hmm. And so even after dealing with having both enhancers, you got the MAP enhancer and the EFI enhancer, and they're both working together with my hydrogen system, I was still struggling to get the gains, the mileage gains that I had already seen. I knew they existed. And getting back to my friends, especially the ones that are mechanics, it was crazy. I felt like the boy who cried wolf, because I would go to them and I would say, oh, I'm getting these great mileage gains. And they'd be like, okay, you know, why don't we dyno it? Why don't we test it? Why don't we, you know, show me a road test, show me a dyno test, show me something to prove it. And I'd be like, okay, no problem. And then by the time I'd be about ready to do a road test or a dyno test, the mileage gains would disappear. And I'd say, yeah, we're going to have to cancel that test.
Sorry
about
funny?
That. Yeah. Yeah. I'd be like, sorry, you know, game over for me. I can't seem to get it quite right yet. I have to do a little more tuning.
Well,
I'll have to get back to you.
Many people have held off from manufacturing and installing these devices for the public because of this very situation. It's got
Absolutely.
Many people gun-shy. They believe that technology is legitimate, but they want other people to go through this learning curve before they jump on the bandwagon and start offering a product.
Yeah, and I can totally understand why now. At the time, I thought I was doing everything right. And, you know, you'll go all over the web, and you'll read certain sites that, you know, everybody's trying to make a quick buck off of HHO or hydroxy or whatever you want to call it. And the problem is, I feel that most people are just trying to make the money, and they're not really concerned about the real research that needs to be done and the real implementation of this technology in a vehicle in the real world. They're just not dealing with it. They're just saying, here you go, here's an electrolyzer, slap it in your car and you're done, and you're going to get these huge gains. And let me tell you, it's a lot harder than that. There's a lot more work involved. And if you're willing to go the extra mile and do the research and do the work that's required, you'll get the gains, and they'll be worth it. But you gotta, like I said, you really have to do some serious research as to how to get it.
And so,
and that's the purpose of the article that I've written.
Yeah, it was because of that article that I invited you to be a guest on this program, because it was a really excellent, you know, summary of your experience and how you, you know, can say that you fought the system and you won, you know.
Exactly, yep. I fought the ECU and won the war, and I want to help other people win. And the biggest reason I want to help other people win, and everybody's coming up to me and they're saying, Mike, what's your motivation? Are you getting paid? Are you selling a product? What, you know, why are you doing this? The reason is I want some credibility. I'm tired of people laughing at me. People still laugh at me, and they're in total disbelief about this technology. I'm seeing incredible mileage gains. 61% is the latest amount of mileage gains I'm seeing on my current Jeep project, and that's just incredible. I am still standing beside myself, and I didn't think that was possible.
And
but I'm going to tell
good,
you,
though? It feels great.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I feel like every time I drive to work, I'm seeing the impossible happen right in front of me, and it's just incredible.
Well, not only that, as a society, we're being so far removed from being able to do anything to anything that we use anymore. I mean, everything is electronic. It all has, you know, the basic instructions are don't even try to tamper with this thing because you ain't going to be able to fix it.
Exactly. They want the consumer out of the loop, and they're more and more they're trying to get that to happen. And,
apparently your experience with the modern vehicle is an example of that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, it wasn't at all easy to try to accomplish this. And if they have their way, they'd make it even harder.
And I just didn't believe the whole automobile industry conspiracy theory, all that stuff. I knew it was out there, and I just said, oh, come on, that's a bunch of hogwash. This can't be so bad. Until I actually saw it happen right in front of me. And I saw this computer battling every attempt I would try to make to get slightly better fuel economy. This thing was, you know, right there to cut my throat. And so I set out after having these continuous, I do a tuning of the system. I kept messing with the O2s, with the EFI and the MAP, and I kept going back and forth and back and forth. And I started just reading up on other things. Well, what other routes are people taking? And some of them were extreme. Some of them were, well, just yank the ECU and replace it with your own, or reprogram the whole prom of the ECU and crazy things like that. And I certainly wasn't the kind of guy to do that. I have friends that are capable of doing that, but did I want to pursue all that? No. I was looking for a slightly simpler route. And so I went to just do some more research on the web, and I said, okay, is there anyone out there that has a different system from what I'm seeing? Because most people are saying use the MAP or use the EFI. One or the other will do the job. I'm using both together. Some people are saying to use both together, and that will do the job, and neither was working. So what is it? What's the secret? Well, I stumbled upon the HAFC, the Hydro Assist Fuel Cell, which is, as far as I know, one of the very first complete kits that was sold on the market for exactly what I'm doing, hydrogen on demand. And the key to this kit, supposedly, if you read all the literature, was the their so-called computer that trains the computer. It's called the Optimizer. And they have the Optimizer 3X is the name of this device. And I was fascinated by this device because I wanted to see what all it was addressing on the automobile to get it to do what it was doing, because these people were claiming incredible mileage gains. They guarantee at least a 50% increase in mileage. That's their guarantee. It's a money-back guarantee. And I thought, wow, there's not a single other person on the web that has a system like this that makes that kind of a guarantee and guarantees that you'll get your money back if you don't achieve that kind of mileage. And so I said, there might be some real merit to this. Let me see what this Optimizer addresses on the car. And if you research a little bit further, you'll see that the Optimizer addresses the IAT sensor. That's the intake air temperature sensor. It also addresses the CTS sensor, which is the coolant temperature sensor. It can address two of those. It addresses two O2s. Those are both pre-catalytic converter O2s it can address. And right now, they're also implementing the same MAP enhancer that I'm using. So they're addressing the MAP or the MAF, that's the mass airflow or manifold absolute pressure sensor, either one of those, the load, also known as the load sensor on the car, as well as the IAT and the CTS. And they do it all together, and they tune everything to be in unison with each other. And why is that? Well, the way I see it, inside the ECU, you have fuel tables. And what you're trying to achieve is the slightly leaner factory fuel table. If you try to tweak just one sensor at a time, certain conditions exist temporarily where the ECU will allow it to happen for a short amount of time. But if certain things aren't in agreement, if, for example, if the IAT and the CTS sensors don't match what an O2 is saying, if an O2 is saying, this car is running rich, and you need to lean it out, and the IAT and the CTS don't also comply with that within the ECU's programming, it will allow it maybe for a little while, but it will always default back to another fuel table, and you'll end up losing your gains. And that's exactly what was happening to me.
Isn't that interesting?
So, yeah, very interesting.
The idea was suggested, I think, the other day, that you just keep shutting the system down and let it continuously relearn.
Well, that's another thing. It's funny. A lot of people are discussing that right now. It's a very hot topic, and they have the idea to kill the computer each time you turn off the car, to actually kill the keep alive memory circuit, is what it's also known as, the KAM. And that particular approach was already taken by the people at Dutchman Enterprises, the people that made the HAFC kit. Did they have any luck with that? No, absolutely not. It did not work in their favor. It actually worked against them because of the dreaded relearning procedure. Every time a car would be cold started again, it would, you know, have problems with idling. It would just run a whole lot differently than it really should. The parameters had to be relearned by the ECU for everything. and you'd have to let the car sit there and warm up for 10 minutes before you could take it anywhere, and that's just obviously not going to work for the real-world consumer like me or you. So the whole theory of killing the keep-alive memory circuit is not a good idea. And as I continue to tell you more about how I learned this stuff, I have to mention a guy by the name of Mike Holler. Many people know him as MPG Mike in numerous forums all over the net, and I have to thank him and praise him for his efforts in this technology, and I have to say that he really deserves the full credit for my article, because I based my article that I wrote on everything that he basically taught me. So,
by the way, speaking of the article, is it available at a particular place on the internet? Is there a...
Yes. It's on a website called ehow.com. If you just go to ehow.com and you put in the search engine there, hydrogen on demand, you're bound to see my article right there.
And so ehow is ehow.com?
That's right, yep.
And then just type in HOD, or you have to spell out hydrogen on demand?
Any one of those will work. Hydrogen on demand works, or HOD. It's also it's got keywords like HHO and stuff like that, so you can find it no matter what you put in there, pretty much. So,
okay.
But it's important to mention that Mike Holler wrote an article called "Tuning for Mileage," and more heavily, this article is in circulation amongst people that are HHO enthusiasts.
Even though the article wasn't written about that, right?
Well, the article was written about any general fuel enhancement system whatsoever, anything that you have that will increase the efficiency of combustion. It was written for that, and it said that whenever you do have a significant increase in the efficiency of the combustion process, you have to compensate for it within the ECU, because the parameters that you're now running your vehicle at are well outside of the regular factory parameters. And the only way to get the gains that you're looking to achieve is to retune the ECU. And how do you do that? Well, the normal way is to go in. You have to have big time technical knowledge about ECUs and computer programming. You have to go in and actually modify all the tables inside the PROM, the EPROM and all that stuff. And it's crazy and incredibly complicated. But for the average mechanic to be able to do that, it just wasn't even possible. So what Mike did, Mike Holler came out with this article called Tuning for Mileage, and it teaches mechanics on how to properly tune a vehicle that has some sort of fuel enhancement system on it. It does not specifically say it's only for HOD. It could be for anything that increases combustion efficiency. And so I read through that article, and it's a rather complex article. It's definitely meant for people that are very, very experienced in the automotive industry, or experienced mechanics, people that have been working with cars quite extensively.
And so you're describing a very, very small segment of the population.
Exactly. And I said, man, I can read this and I can understand it, but can the average Joe understand it? Probably not, And that's exactly what I wanted to achieve. I said, man, it would be great if I could take this information that's here, because this is a gold mine, and I could rewrite it and give it to the normal everyday experimenter with HOD, or the Joe mechanic down the street could read what I have to write and apply it. And so I took the techniques that I learned in his Tuning for Mileage guide, and rewrote them in my article, but based on an HOD installation only. And I took pictures of everything I have done with my vehicle, which is now a 1996 Jeep Cherokee. I actually got into an accident about 2 months ago and totaled the 98, unfortunately.
Were you using the booster system at the time?
Yes, I was, and everyone asked me, did it explode? No, absolutely not. Everything was fine.
But what happened to the chamber and so on in the accident?
I'm actually using the exact same booster. And I took a frontal hit, too. I took a hit on the engine compartment. Luckily, it was on the opposite side that the booster was located on, so it didn't actually impact the booster itself. It did yank it out of the engine compartment pretty bad. It was laying on its side. But amazingly, everything survived. The booster still runs fine. There's no loose parts inside. And I reused every component of my HOD system that was on that vehicle is now on this 1996 Jeep Cherokee.
Wow. Well, you're the first person to publicly describe an accident in a vehicle with a hydrogen booster on board.
Mm-hmm.
Now, were you continuing to produce gas even after the accident? Was that a concern?
Yes. Yeah, when I took the hit, I was T-boned at an intersection by a Chevy Suburban, so it wasn't anything light. It wasn't a light accident. It was a pretty heavy hit. It was about 50 miles per hour that this person hit my Jeep Cherokee, and he spun me around. That's how hard he hit me. Spun me around a whole 180 degrees. But the Jeep was amazingly still running. Even after taking the hit, it was still idling, and it was running well enough that I was able to get it to limp off the side of the road and pull over to the shoulder. And yes, I was still producing gas, HHO gas at the time, and I had a kill switch in the passenger compartment, and I killed it then, but no explosion, no danger whatsoever. So.
Yeah. Now, the concern has been expressed that the hydrogen booster should be connected to a inertia switch, such as all modern vehicles have, so that the fuel pump is turned off in an accident.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
that's a very good idea, and definitely something to consider. The thing that did concern me a lot was at the time, right after the accident, I didn't know if the fuel booster had taken a direct hit or if it was cracked, and I had been using sodium hydroxide as a catalyst within the cell, and so I was a little bit worried about the fire department, when they responded and they were opening the hood of my vehicle and everything. I made it a point to go over there and warn them that cell contains sodium hydroxide and that they should not touch it, and
right.
They should be very, very cautious. It'd probably be a good idea to even have a sticker on your cell or in the engine compartment alerting emergency staff, because what if I was knocked unconscious?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly
something
right.
Like that.
Although,
you know,
in an accident scenario, the fire department is well aware of the fact that a battery could explode, and that would spew battery acid, which is equally dangerous to the electrolyte that's used in a lot of boosters.
Yep.
So it's not like they're unaware of the fact that under the hood there could be some, well, even in a battery there'd be a hydrogen explosion. If there's an
absolutely,
arc,
yeah.
You know, so it's not like the booster exposes them to that much more danger than it already exists when they're raising the hood of a vehicle that's been in an accident.
Yeah,
but
if
you
look
say,
at it from that viewpoint, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it would be
that.
Helpful to have a warning sticker, though, and probably a requirement, actually. Mm-hmm. Batteries have warning labels on them.
Yeah, I would see, you know, you have a hazardous material in there. Definitely, you'd have to have some sort of sticker to address that, to make it legal.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the basis of my article. What I want to do is help the people. I see so many people struggling in forums. I try to keep up with the forums, and I try to help people as much as I can. There's so many different forums that I read over, and I look to see if people are having success. And to be quite honest, I would say the vast majority of experimenters with this technology are seeing a limited amount of success, just like I used to. They see a small burst in their MPG, and they see some positive results, but are only fighting the computer to have it take the gains away. And I want to see that stop. I want to see people keep the mileage gains for an extended period of time. And I want to see them get incredible gains like I've achieved. 61% is way beyond anything I could have ever imagined possible with this.
Now, the 61% meant that you went from what to what?
I went from 18 to 29. 18 to 29.
Okay. So you gained 11 miles per gallon.
Yep.
And so 11 miles per gallon from 18 is a 61% increase.
Yep, 61% increase. And it's important to note, a lot of people say that the placebo effect has a lot to do with people's gains and blah, 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 blah. And it's important to note that this is definitely nothing of the sort. I travel the same route to work every day. It's 31 miles each way, 62 miles in total. And, you know, my car used to maybe go, this is just a very relative way to measure your fuel economy, but I used to be able to go maybe three and a half days or 3 days on a tank of fuel back and forth to work. And now I can drive an entire week back and forth to work and go into Saturday on the weekend with a little bit of fuel left. I mean, that's a huge testament right there to something being different. And I didn't have to slow down my car and drive like a grandma either. I'm still driving at my normal speed is around 70 miles an hour, and I'm not cutting back on speed or anything like that. I do notice that when I fully engage my system, which, like I said, it addresses all the different sensors, there is going to be a slight amount of power loss. You do get a slight power increase when you lean to a certain extent, but if you go a little bit leaner, your power will go down. There's a little bit of a power curve, and I'm definitely on the leaner side of that curve to get the maximum economy. But if I want my power to come back, I simply just remove the mods to the sensors, and the way I do that is I have everything toggle switched, so I can switch my CTF circuit out, I can switch my IAT circuit out, I can turn off my map enhancer, which is changing the voltage reference on the map, and I can turn off the EFI circuit as well. So that turn off all those circuits, and voila, I'm back to factory, and all my power is there, the usual power that I'm used to. If I just want to run, I could run just the hydroxy without any enhancers or anything like that, and of course I'll be running a bit rich if I don't run any of the enhancers, but that will give me a lot of power. If I want a power boost, if I want to actually run more power than I would normally have, I do that. So you can employ different techniques with the system to get different outcomes that you want. If you just want horsepower and you don't care about economy, sure, you can just slap an electrolyzer on your car and pretty much do nothing else. If you want the economy, like I said, you have to address the different sensors on the cars.
Okay, so let's describe. What does a person see when they're looking on the inside of your vehicle?
Well, my first experiment looked a lot like the Back to the Future DeLorean. And people got in there and they were just like, what in the world is this? No, I would never do this to my car because I had crazy toggle switches everywhere and potentiometers and wire clusters going here and there. I had a digital pyrometer on my dash because I was very concerned when I first started this. I was really concerned about obviously burning my valves, valve temperature and stuff like that. You read a lot on the web about how if you run a leaner mixture in your vehicle, you're in danger of overheating your valves. And so as a safety precaution, I put in a digital pyrometer, which reads the exhaust gas temperature. It's an EGT gauge, and then I would sit there and monitor that, and I would actually see consistently that when I'd turn on the hydroxy, my temperature was sustained. It wouldn't get any hotter than it normally would, even while leaning the mixture substantially. And that was enough to show me that this is really going to work, and that it's not a scam, and there's nothing false about it. As a matter of fact, I did more research and found out that NASA had experimented with the exact same thing back in the 70s and found similar results, that when you inject hydrogen and oxygen or hydroxy gas into an engine, that it facilitates a leaner burn of the fuel.
Yeah, so really nothing is new, is it? It's all
stuff that's
been well expounded. It's just that we've all been confounded by the powers that be into not realizing what our potential is for reducing pollution and increasing efficiency and so on. So what's been your motive in all this?
Definitely just the betterment of everybody's life. I mean, just the betterment of us as mankind, as civilization, just knowing that we have the technology sitting right here. We can get better fuel economy. We can eliminate huge amounts of greenhouse gases. I mean, that was probably one of the biggest things that made a huge impact on my life, was seeing after the implementation of the very first water for gas system, my emissions just went down to near nothing as far as standing behind the exhaust pipe and breathing it in. I could sit there and just smell nothing, and nothing was good. I mean, I could see steam coming out my tailpipe, and my car would actually form a puddle in the driveway or in the garage that I was working on. One time, a friend and I actually closed the garage door just to see, just to prove a point. Now, we were obviously monitoring very closely to see if we'd feel lightheaded or anything like that, but we stood behind the vehicle, and we just stood there in awe as we had the garage door closed, and we could smell virtually nothing and see water coming out the tailpipe and dripping onto the ground, and it was just an absolutely wonderful feeling to know that we were doing that for our environment, and that if this could be implemented in so many more vehicles across the country, we could really change, have a huge impact on our dependency on fossil fuels, and we could change the world, really, if people
Just the reduction in driving that the high price of oil has created. USA Today ran an article a couple months ago, and it was it was ridiculous, the number of millions or billions of barrels of oil that have not been consumed because of everybody driving less, just over the last 8 months or so.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. And so, like you say, implementing technologies like this would reduce it even further.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And another thing is, I want to prove to people that you don't have to entirely change your lifestyle to make a big difference, too, because that's a big deal to a lot of Americans and a lot of people in general, is that, well, I'll do it, but how much do I have to change my existing lifestyle? And by doing this system, by implementing this system, this HOD technology, on my Jeep Cherokee SUV, instead of some tiny little, you know, Geo Metro three-cylinder car, I'm showing people that you can make a big difference even on a vehicle that would normally get fairly poor fuel economy, and I can still continue to drive that vehicle and be environmentally friendly and see some more money in my pocket as well. So there's great benefits even with a vehicle of that type.
Yeah, so the real challenge then is to make this truly user-friendly from the standpoint of something that an average person can deal with.
Absolutely.
The average person isn't even hardly raising their hood anymore.
Yeah. And well, I can tell you that based on everything I learned from Mike Holler and his I tell you what, there's a training archive online for the HAFC in which he's actually doing conference calls with the mechanics that install the HAFC. He does it almost every week, and they record each call. It's 3 hours long, and he trains the mechanics and helps them out when they have difficulties, and that's where I learned a lot of what I learned about dealing with vehicle computers and how it varies from different makes and models, different years and all that. It was basically like a training class for me. It was like almost like a correspondence course for me. I was sitting at home listening to all this, and it's the public can get on the site. It's not a limited access site or anything like that. I believe it's hafcinstallersupport.com. I could be wrong about the address, but if you do a Google on that, that will come up, and those calls are archived for everyone to listen to. And if you would go through and listen to the many, many hours of Mike Holler instructing the mechanics on how to install an HOD system properly, I mean, that's a gold mine, because they've dealt with so many different problem vehicles, you know, everything from Mercedes-Benz to a Volkswagen Jetta. It's in there somewhere. You just have to listen to the calls and see what mechanics are up against. But I can tell you that even for the average mechanic, it's a very challenging thing to properly tune the ECU and to get the mileage gains that they are promising, because they are promising a 50% mileage increase or better, and that's quite a challenging task. But they are accomplishing it quite a bit, almost regularly.
Let's go back to your mechanic friends. What's their attitude now?
They are still skeptical. I'm still waiting to get that first dyno test or road test with them. So until they actually see the raw numbers and the raw data, I don't expect them to believe me.
So you've got some doubting Thomases.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that, like I said earlier, I would tell them that my mileage had gone up because it had, and then it would dip. It would go back down, it would be almost stock again, and then it would go back up again, and I'd say, hey, this is looking promising again. I think I'm ready for that test. And they'd say, okay, Mike, how about next Thursday? And I'd be like, okay. And then I'd call them up and say, no, I can't do it. Sorry, I got problems again. And so more and more they just started to laugh. They're like, why even try? Why are you even still tinkering with that? You know, they were surprised that I even continued to keep doing it because they thought it was
We're
just...
all grateful for your persistence because it's people
you
who are hanging in there and continuing to do the hands-on, you know, trial and error research, just like Thomas Edison. He said he learned 1,000 ways not to make a filament.
Absolutely, I feel I have a very pioneering spirit, much like that. I hope to be much the same in spirit as Thomas Edison when it comes to this kind of stuff, because I really want to try my best to explore the technology to its fullest extent and get better results, not just for me, but for everybody. I want to help the technology. I really want to help the technology gain credibility, not just in my life, but in everybody's, because the sooner HOD experimenters start getting consistent results and they're able to prove these results, the sooner the bad press, the negative press will go away. You got so many people out there that are bashing this technology, saying it's a farce, it's made up, it's a scam, it's all about money making. And I can tell you that there's definitely, when it comes to the ratio of bad products versus good products out there for HOD stuff, there's definitely more bad products out there than there are good, legitimate products, unfortunately. The market's become saturated with people that are just trying to make a quick buck. They're selling useless plans that nobody could ever actually create, like the Hytronix module, or what is that, the... There's so many plans out there that have just crazy explanations for how you can run your car completely on water, but no way they can ever actually be used or implemented. So
yeah, but you know the good thing about any and all of it is that it's causing people to at least take notice that there is such a thing. And even if it's a little bit frustrating and you have to wade through some garbage, ultimately, as in your case, you're a perfect example of that.
I had to take everything that I had learned from every single website, and I still do. I scour YouTube, and I have to determine what's legitimate and what's something I should stick with, and what's something I should steer clear of. And fortunately, I can say I've definitely gotten lucky on that, and I've picked the right things to go with, and like I said, I put the right recipe together, and I got the right results. I got the results that I was looking for, and that's why I wrote.
You did it in a year's time. That's impressive that a person can go through this process in a year.
Yeah, it became quite an obsession for me, I should say. I mean, it really became my hobby. I mean, I come right home from work and immediately get started on what can I do next to make this happen? What can I do next? What can I learn to make this technology work for me? Because I knew it had potential. I could see it was working to some extent. But like I said, I was just fighting the computer. That was the last step. I was just, if I could get past this computer problem, then I'll be in good shape.
But you know, it has been a great year, hasn't it? I mean, it's a good hobby. And,
oh, absolutely.
It isn't something that has left you frustrated, even though there was frustration along the way, but you really feel good about having, you know, tackled the technological problem in the face of, like you say, naysayers who are trying to make people believe that it doesn't work at all or can't work.
Mm-hmm.
And you've been able to prove them wrong and show that there is a valid technology at stake here.
I think the biggest argument online about why it doesn't work, and this was something that I even thought about when I first saw the technology, is that obviously Faraday's law says that you can only get so much hydroxy gas or hydrogen gas from so much electrolysis. In other words, your power input into the water is going to be more than what you actually get out from burning the resulting gas. And it took me a long time to get past that fact. I was like, man, if you're making this gas from the alternator and the alternator's spinning that that belt on your engine, and you know that's causing you to lose a few horsepower maybe in driving that belt, how are you getting any of this back? Where's the energy coming from? And then I realized that it was the interaction of the hydroxy with the gasoline that ultimately made it all happen. The engine combustion efficiency, just increasing that, and not only doing that by the means of the hydroxy gas, but also doing little things like the fuel heater, you know, as an enhancer to that entire method, or even adding things such as xylene and acetone, which is something that Ozzy taught in his books, Water for Gas. So I put all these things into my mind and said, okay, now I understand why it all works, because you got all these things working in concert together to make it happen, and you're not getting any free energy. As a matter of fact, you're just using wasted energy in a different way. You're reusing wasted energy that would be thrown away and focusing that towards regaining your fuel economy, and that's why it works. And another thing, for mechanics that are very closed-minded about the whole thing, one of the things I often say to them is, well, you got these guys that are horsepower enthusiasts, and they're trying to get the maximum power out of any vehicle, and that's what they do. That's entirely what they do. They retune the ECU, and they put on bigger throttle bodies, and they put on bigger headers and all this stuff, and they're trying to get the most horsepower and performance that they can get. Why couldn't you do the same thing with the car based on solely on fuel economy? Why can't you put as many aftermarket devices on as you can find that have a history of increasing efficiency, put them all together into one big pot, and put them all on the same car and get a hyper-mileage car? And that's what I tell them, and then it starts to make sense.
Sure. Let's just touch on one last thing before we conclude. You mentioned xylene. Is that something that you've used consistently now for some time? Or?
Yes, and I've been using a combination of xylene, a little bit of pure acetone. 100% pure is very important. You don't use the Home Depot grade or hardware store grade paint thinner stuff, because that doesn't vaporize quite as easily. So you use 100% pure acetone that you get at, say, the pharmacy, a little bit of that, and I also use what's called GP7, which is a two-cycle engine oil, just a small amount of that, and that's for engine protection. Since you are running your engine with a leaned-out air-to-fuel ratio, the GP7 that's made by Torco, that's the name of the company that makes it, actually helps protect your engine in that scenario. So a combination of all three items mixed into my fuel tank, it usually goes in with each fill-up, and it really costs...
How much are you adding?
I'm adding about, let's see here, if I look at my measuring bottle, because I can't remember off the top of my head. Looks like it is about 12 ounces. No, 10 ounces, I'm sorry. It's 10 ounces altogether. Looks like 4 ounces of acetone, and then you have a little, just a like a spoonful of GP7, and then 10 ounces, or I'm sorry, 6 ounces of xylene.
Okay, and xylene is commonly used for what?
It's a paint thinner as well.
It's sold in a paint thinner department or something? A paint
that's
department?
Right, yep. And if you do research on xylene on the web, you'll find out that xylene is actually a major component that's within gasoline already. It's already in the gasoline. And so what we're doing with the xylene is supposedly we're increasing the octane of the fuel by using the xylene, and then we have the acetone to help break the fuel down. It helps break down the covalent bonds of the fuel and help it burn better.
So for one tank full, which in your case is, what, 18 gallons or so? Or?
Yep. That's 20 gallons, actually.
20 gallons, you're adding 12 ounces total of an additive, a concoction that you make up.
Equal parts of xylene and acetone, and then, like I said, like a little, just a couple drops of the Torco GP7 to add a little bit of lubrication.
Not much at all.
And it goes a long way. It's very cheap for what you get out of it. You definitely see a small increase in your fuel economy just by using that alone, definitely. And one of the biggest things it does, I noticed right away, is when I first started my project on both Jeeps, both were heavily carboned. These Jeeps are running at around 150,000, 160,000 miles on them. So they're both, very dirty engines, lots of carbon, lots of buildup, lots of gunk in there. And when you run this combination, you're cleaning out everything. Your injectors are becoming clean. You're cleaning out the inside of the engine quite well. You're flushing all that crud out of there. And as most people know, when you run an HOD system, you're already favoring a much cleaner engine. And the reason for that is the hydroxy gas, when you burn the hydroxy, it acts like a steam cleaner. It just steam cleans the inside of your engine, cleans all that gunk out too. So when you use the combination of the fuel additives and the hydroxy together, you can expect to have an incredibly clean engine, a longer-lasting engine, and a less polluting engine, because those carbon deposits aren't building up inside your engine. You're not making all kinds of hydrocarbons to come out your exhaust.
Okay. Well, Mike, it's really been nice. We've stretched 15 minutes to just over an hour, and it's been very valuable information that you've conveyed. Again, if someone wants to contact you with a question or maybe to discuss this, what would be a good address, an email address to contact you at?
They can reach me at djmikewalsh@aol.com.
Okay, DJ Mike Walsh.
Mm-hmm. As in disc jockey.
There you go.
I used to be one.
Well, you're not the first person involved in broadcast engineering who's been very instrumental in helping other people with this. And as far as finding the article that you wrote summarizing all this, that would be again at
eHow, that's E-H-O-W.